capacity to be able to be found in a contract. Not only because of whether they're a minor or not, not only because of whether or not they are maybe potentially or legally incompetent, but other kinds of things that can happen, such as mistake or fraud or undue influence, that can render a contract not legally enforceable. And so we're back to the voids and avoidables.
We had on the void last week.
Remembering that a voidable contract is a contract that one of the two parties may be able to get out of by pursuing an equitable remedy because of the actions of the other party or because of their own legal status. A void contract was one in which, for public policy reasons, neither party can ever come to a court to get out of it or enforce it. It's absolutely unenforceable and can't be enforced by anybody, such as a contract for illegal subject matter, a contract when there was fraud in the execution of the contract, we gave another example last week, in a marriage situation, somebody that's already married to somebody else can't enforce that marriage. The second person, because that second marriage was void from the beginning. So the first thing is minors. Historically, minors' contracts were voidable. A minor would be somebody under the age of 18. So it's voidable except two rules you got to know about contracts with minors. The first one is that a judge sitting in equity can change the contract and make it a contract that the judge doesn't think was fair, fair. So the judge could say, I think this minor was taken advantage of by this businessman. This minor didn't have savvy and really didn't negotiate and no clue as to what this thing was actually worth. The Latin term, quantum merit. Might be better if we didn't have Latin terms in the law, but we do. Quantum merit, if we had to make it English, would mean just this, reasonable price under the circumstances. A reasonable price or a fair market price. That's rule number one. Minors. If the court's going to enforce a contract involving an adult and a minor. Rule number two is the contract, if the minor is enforceable, if the contract was for necessary service or items, call it necessary items. What's necessary? Depends on the facts and the circumstances. What's necessary for your child might not be what's necessary for Bill Gates' child, Ted Turner's child, or some other millionaire or billionaire's child. Okay, the billionaire doesn't have to go, the billionaire's son probably doesn't have to pay rent anywhere, probably doesn't have to have a car, it's probably be chauffeur around. So it depends on what your facts are. Food, certainly necessary items. We all have to eat. Clothes, shelter. In Michigan, a minor can quit school and emancipate themselves at the age of 16. So a minor can quit school, a minor can get a work permit in Michigan, a minor can be out working and living in an apartment, emancipate themselves. Although the emancipation procedure has to go through the probate court. You've got to get an order from a probate judge officially emancipating you if you want to, at 16 or 17, live outside the home. And the probate judge could say no, if they wanted to. But whether or not you're legally emancipated. Some minors are living out on their own. We discard. These rules apply. So, food, shelter, clothing, a car, if they say, I have no other way to get to school and I have no other way to get to work, I have to have a car. Car, food, clothes, shelter. DVD player?
No.
Not necessary.
So something is not what you need to live on. It's not in the course, it's not a necessary item. If it really is what this minor needs to live on, then it is a necessary item, which means that the contract is enforceable, but at the quantum merit rate, if the judge believes they were overcharged. Lucas?
Does being emancipated change the enforceability of other contracts?
Of a what contract?
If I'm an emancipated minor, are other contracts enforceable with me, or still just those for necessity?
No. No, it's the same rule applies, whether you're emancipated or not emancipated. The significance of the emancipation is more on the parent's part. Because if the child is not emancipated, the parent may be liable for the child's torts for not controlling the child, not being aware of the child, not having rules for the child, not keeping the child off the street, and so on and so forth. Okay. Okay, rule number three. Rule number three. Okay, the minor now exercises their right to void, get out of the contract. The adult can't. The contracts of minors are voidable, meaning that only the minor can get out of it. The adult can't, because the minor is the protected party. The reason why we have the rule is to protect the minor. So they're the only ones that can get out. Now they say, well, I want my money back. I want my money back. Minor must return the consideration they've got if they're going to exercise the right to get out of it. And if they wait too long, this is the legal term. And we're going to see this a lot through contract law. This is the first time we see it. Ratification. Ratification means that the minor either expressed their intention to continue with the contract when they could have got out of it, let the other party know they were not going to exercise their rights to get out of it, they were going to keep it, or by waiting too long to exercise the right. If the minor waits, and we have a multiple choice question on the next test on this, if the minor waits too long to try to get out of the contract, they will be deemed to have ratified it. And once the minor has ratified the contract is complete. There's no more getting out of it. I'm purposely not using the word cancel. Later we come across the word canceling contracts under different circumstances, and I don't want to confuse the two scenarios. So ratification means I could get out of it, I might be able to get out of it, but no, I want to keep it. Or I waited too long. And if you wait too long to pursue an equitable remedy regarding a contract, we already know what that's called, right? Latches. That's one of the defenses that you could raise in an equitable lawsuit. In other words, a minor wants to say, yes, I want to give you back the car, dealer. I drove the unit out of the car, I'm sorry, the car is now a piece of crap, but here it is, and give me my money back. No. Had the minor gone back to the dealer after driving the car for 100 miles maybe, okay. But the minor wants to bring the car back after driving 5,000 miles and trashing it, for all intents and purposes. And so it's no longer fair at that point to allow the minor to get the money back because it's unjust enrichment at the expense of another party, and there's no public policy reason to protect the minor at that point because the minor is the one that's in the wrong at that point. So there's no reason for the law to step in and protect them. So how long is too long to wait? It's going to depend on the circumstances. If you've got items such as produce that decline in value quickly, the period of time for exercising the right to get out of contract is going to be very short. If the items do not depreciate in value quickly, longer period of time. But 90 days is the period of time that I've seen most often in all the cases that I've looked at, having a rule of thumb for 90 days. But not if that miner drove the car for 100,000 miles during that 90 days. Then he ain't going to be able to get his money back. What about if a miner misrepresents their age? Does that have any effect on the miner's power to disaffirm the contract? What do you think?
You mentioned type of fraud?
Yes, exactly. That's fraud. And fraudulent inducement is another one of the categories that causes a contract to be voidable. Voidable by the party that was not the party that engaged in the fraud, but the other party. So a minor will not get, there's no longer a reason to protect a minor that goes out and commits frauds. So it's not going to be voidable at that point.
So basically, if a minor walked up to a car dealership and had an ID saying he was 18, and then 2 weeks later brings the car back and says, yeah, I'm really 17. Basically, the car dealership says, that seems to be you, you still have
to keep your car. If a minor fraudulently misrepresents your age, you're not going to get any help in court. Okay, let's see. Liability of a parent, page 312. Ordinarily, a parent is not liable on the contract made by a minor child. A parent may be liable, however, if the child is acting as the agent of the parent in making the contract. That's after contracts, that's the next area we get into, is the law of agency and principle. Representative transactions. Agents acting on behalf and legally binding their principals. Agents committing torts during the course of their employment. Who's liable when the agent commits a tort? I'm going to cover all that later.
So what kind of contract with the kid?
So if the child is acting as an agent for the parent, the parent's liable.
Yeah, but what kind of contract with that? Like, what would be an example of that?
Food, household items, building materials for a house, maybe? Anything like that. Michigan also has a statute, I think I've already mentioned this. Parents owner is liable for up to $2,500 for torts committed by the children which were in the middle. But if the juvenile court obtains jurisdiction over the minor because of something the minor did, the juvenile court simultaneously taken jurisdiction over the parent. And once the juvenile court has jurisdiction over the parent, then whatever amount the judge wants to make the parents pay on behalf of the kids, they can make them pay. And that was really hit home in Midland about 8 years ago. Anybody here remembers the famous Sylvan Lane house crashing case on Sylvan Lane here in Midland? These parents went away for Thanksgiving Day vacation, 4 days, and they left their 18-year-old son at home. He mentions to a guy who I later represented in the criminal case involving him, oh, yeah, man, yeah. Come on over, bring your girlfriend, we'll kind of chill out for a while. Well, within the next day, half of Midland was aware of this. There was a weekend-long party at the house. You know, the way we're just sort of spread like wildfire. The next thing you know, you had carpools of people coming up from Saginaw. This house was completely trashed. And they were people acting like animals. My clients, of course, didn't do that. My clients were actually the better ones in the transaction, as it turned out, because my guy was a friend of the guy, so he wasn't trashing the house, although he was an apartment. We had people urinating against walls, and just disgusting. And because a lot of these people were minors, and because the juvenile court judge had obtained jurisdiction over the minors because of their delinquency behavior, the juvenile court got jurisdiction over the parents. And some of these parents were ordered to pay restitution, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Restitution is joint and several in a situation like that. just like tort liability between several defendants that are all sued for the same tort, joint several. That means everybody is ordered to pay all of it. And whoever they collected from first, they collected from first. And so some of these parents had a huge restitution order hanging over.
How old were the children you mentioned?
These were 15, 16, 17-year-old kids.
Okay.
Wouldn't the 18-year-olds that, like, stayed home at the house, though?
No, not 17. Adult criminal liability in Michigan starts at 17. So, well, these were 14, 15, and 16-year-old kids that, there were other older kids there, too, but those kids, in juvenile court, their parents were ordered to pay. Right.
So, it wasn't an assumption of risk on the parents they had? They were leaving their young children alone? Like,
That wouldn't have anything to do with whether or not the people whose house was trashed had a right to.
No, I'm saying the people's house that was trashed, didn't their kids know the party?
Yeah, didn't that age?
Yeah, but there's no assumption of risk there. This was intentional trashing of that house.
Yeah, but when
malicious destruction of property. Assumption of risk is a negligence defense.
Wouldn't that kid though, like, you know, I know, like me, like if my parents are out and I call my best friends, like, hey, come over play video games. We're sitting there playing video games, and all of a sudden four cars load of people start piling out with kegs. I'm going to be like, get out of here.
Don't leave your house entrusted to your... In fact, another one of the cases we're going to be doing in here is very close to the same thing, as you'll see when you read the case that I'm going to give you, the real case that I actually handled. Time for the break.
And then we'll see who wants to be our justices on our court.